Yes, you're on the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Happy Pride, everybody.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Are we still doing Brat Summer, or what's the new?
I think technically it's not Brat Summer. Okay. I mean, for me, I think every summer is going to be Brat Summer. However, also for me, this is, you know, health problem summer, yeah, as yeah, last always. Summer was. So it's you know, we're not quite in I keep postponing Brat, thinking, oh, maybe this summer will be the summer I get to be Brat. And it's like, no, this summer is the summer I get to be sick. So but we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, I think Sabrina Carpenter is coming out with a new song this week. So maybe that'll be the anthem. Is she big in the queer community? Do the gays accept Sabrina Carpenter as their straight ally?
The gays do accept Sabrina Carpenter. Okay. I think that Sabrina Carpenter is more on the Taylor Swift side of things. Yeah, in the like, there are certain gays that I guess, I don't know. There's it's a spectrum of pop stardom.
Don't mess this up. No, it's a monolith. It's you're the and, gay spokesperson.
Well, I mean, no, I will be the gay spokesperson. That obviously, yes, for this podcast, Andrade and Pride Month, I will be speaking on behalf of us all.
Of all, yeah.
But I think that there's certain pop stars like Charlie XCX that I think are sort of universally beloved by the gay community, like even gays who don't, like, obviously her main fan base is gay people, and then I think that the gay, even gays who don't really care for her music, like can appreciate her. Like, I don't think there's any real gays who don't like Charlie XCX other than maybe they're sort of sick of Brat goings on because it's been so long. I think that Sabrina Carpenter has probably less gay, like, she seems like less embedded in gay culture. I think that she does have fans, but it's maybe a smaller group of them. I feel sort of like, I like Sabrina Carpenter. I feel like a little more agnostic towards her. I feel like she's maybe in a similar camp to, oddly enough, Olivia Rodrigo, where they're like, yes, gays like them, gays like their music. Are they a gay icon? I don't know. And then I think you have people like Taylor Swift, where there are some gay people who are very, very big fans and ride very hard. And then there's another contingent of gay people who hate them and are like, no,
you
like,
lead that. You lead just, that.
Yes. And I'm in that grouping. And then there's musicians. I'm trying to think of like, I'm trying to think of a female musician, you know, who, like, let's say Lainey Wilson, the country singer, where I don't think, even though she's a woman and she's popular, like, I don't think she really has gay fans. I think that is a straight person.
Not a single person. Yeah, I mean,
a gay person has never liked her.
You're the spokesperson, and I'll take your word for it. If Lainey doesn't have any gay fans, then that's just Bible, like, truth.
Right.
You know?
Where, like, Maren Morris, I would say gay icon.
Oh,
I think,
oh wow, icon status. Okay.
I think that she is in the, I think that she, I would put her in the Charlie XCX camp. Like, she's bi. I think gays really her.
Yeah.
I think she has a really big gay fan base, and she's very outspoken about LGBT rights. I think that people are very into her.
Okay. I mean, Renee Rapp, do you like her new song? Is that too specific?
I haven't heard her new song. I do like Renee Rapp. I feel like the gays like Renee Rapp. I would put her in the grouping with Maren Morris and Charlie XCX.
Oh, wow. Okay. So icon. That's great.
Is there anybody else you'd like? I mean, like, these are, I would say, like, current icons. Then there's, like, the Kylie Minogues and Britney Spears and Lady Gaga of the world. And that's a different territory.
Yeah, we've talked. No, I understand. No, I just, yeah, no, that's all I can think of. If I have other questions for the gay community, I'll bring them to you.
Thank you.
For sure.
I will 100%. Say, I have really been liking Haim's, I mean, I always like Haim, but I've really been liking their new album. I feel like they are in that like mid tier with Sabrina Carpenter. Like, I think the gays like them, but I think that they're probably a group that's mostly for straight women. Unfortunately.
Okay. I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, having been to concerts like Maggie Rogers, I think in that middle group, Kacey Musgraves, gay icon.
Okay. No, this is valuable information. Thank you. Thank you for the education. And it plays perfectly into this week's episode because I feel like a lot of these artists were featured in this soundtrack for the Amazon Prime show Overcompensating. So, I mean, obviously Charlie XCX, but I feel like there were some others in there. I mean,
Well, they name drop Charlie Puth a lot, who I feel like is also. Charlie Puth, the gays love Charlie Puth, I will say. Like,
oh my gosh. Well, he's a fan favorite. Is it's like, well, I don't want to get too far ahead in my analysis of this cultural moment, but it was sort of highlighting how gay straights are, you know, like how the frat community especially is so like homoerotic and yet they act so homophobic. And so it's sort of like, it's funny that the straightest character is the one obsessed with Charlie Puth. If your analysis as 2025's gay spokesperson is to speak to how important Puth is to the queer community.
I guess the thing I would say about Charlie Puth is like, I think there are some artists who, like, I guess, I don't know that gays are like obsessed with Charlie Puth in the same way they're obsessed with like XCX, for example. But I think that Charlie Puth is someone who you would think maybe the gays would dislike. And I think he's proven himself to be sort of like a nice, charming, inoffensive person to the point where gays are like, yeah, like Charlie Puth, like good vibes. Like, yes, like we would take him. And there are other, you know, I feel like especially with male artists, it's like I don't think that Bruno Mars, for example, is getting that sort of positive feedback or like The Weeknd or Drake or whoever else.
That makes sense. Well, we ended last episode on the homophobic and really embarrassing failure of me to recognize the name drop of Benny Drama.
Yes.
And I just want to clear the air that I told you that I recognized him as a figure of media. I just didn't know the name Benny Drama. So I don't know if it's like pure homophobia, you know?
I think it's getting close because I do think that Benny Drama, like failing to just know the name of a queer person and be sort of like, oh, I recognize them, I've never bothered to like look at what the name of his on his Instagram is. Like, oh, I'll just sort of like ingest his clips. Ha ha. Funny. Pass it over. I'm not going to spend any time actually trying to learn this person's name.
Well, I don't know the kombucha girl's like handle. You know what I mean?
Brittany Broski.
I know it now, but I'm saying at the time it was like, what do you mean? I didn't like study up. I don't know.
I think it's one thing to be a viral, like a viral person for one meme. And another thing to sort of be like a general content creator. Because like, I think Benito Skinner, aka Benny Drama, like is a funny person online and has been, you know, like being a social media comedian for a long time.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like he has the same like singular viral clip as like Kombucha Girl or like Charlie Bit Me or
Well, what about the guy? I shouldn't even have this conversation if I'm just digging a hole, but like the guy who's now featured in Hacks, like he was funny.
Oh, Therapist?
I think he's very similar to
Benny Drama. Like,
Now
he has a podcast. I mean, Benny Drama also has a podcast with Mary Beth Throne, who's in overcompensating. I think it, those kinds of, like, I think you could put, like, Meg Stalter, Kat Cohen, you know, there's a group of sort of comedians. What about that
Let Them Eat Cake? Haley Bailey. I don't like her. Do you know her?
I don't know who that is.
Wow, look at that.
Haley Bailey?
You don't show up for the streets. No, she's not worth the time. Wait,
who is this? She's very annoying. I'm Googling Halle Bailey and I'm just getting...
No, her username is like Haley Bailey.
Something. Oh, wait, like, I see her. I see her. Yeah, I've never seen this. Her. I've never seen this woman in my life. I have no idea.
You've who never, she is. Like, she had the whole last year's Met Gala. She did the Let Them Eat Cake viral trend and got torn apart for it. She does like these annoying copycat trends. Like, she doesn't ever have an original. She does these like skits. Anyways, she's very annoying, but she's everywhere because she's like the TikTok girly to be sent to like the Oscars red carpet or whatever. It doesn't matter. I have a vendetta against her. As you
I'm like looking at her TikTok feed as we speak. I have no recollection of this person. Like, this person has not entered my
feed.
She's
not entered the gay space. She's not.
I mean, I do feel like that there are some of those people, like Alex Earl, I know is a big deal, but but I never get her content whenever, like, I know of her as a construct, but I'll have to look her up and be like, what does Alex Earl look like? No idea. I feel like Madison Beer is another one of those people who it's like, I think that her fan base must be more like, I don't know, like straight girls or
straight,
something.
White,
I don't.
Yeah, very specific. Yeah,
I don't know who. We're like, So,
well, now overcompensating. Then I'm curious. Were you like aware this was happening? Was this like because it just kind of came out of nowhere for me, where it dropped and then suddenly everyone was talking about it. But on your side of TikTok, being such a Benny Drama fan, were you aware this was coming? Were you excited?
So I was, and I will, and this is maybe a good place to get into more Benny Drama lore for you.
Since
I feel like you perhaps don't know all of this stuff. Okay, so Benny Drama has been in a long-term relationship with Terrence O'Connor, who goes by Terry.
I read a
Do you know him?
About him? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, just in preparation.
Okay, well, thank you for doing your homework in that regard.
Yeah.
So for a long time, I only knew Terry as Benny's boyfriend. Mm. And he would, you know, pop up in skits. Like, Benny Drama has a famous, like, series of videos where he's sort of, like, bullying Terry's mom. And that's a really funny bit. I sort of kept waiting for Terry's mom to show up and overcompensating, and she didn't. So I was upset about that. But also, like, the videos where... Benny is like dancing in the car, Terry's driving. Anyways, Terry has shown up in a lot of videos. And I think that Terry, had social media also, but like wasn't nearly as popular as Benny Drama was.
He was a creative director.
Yeah. I didn't really realize like what his job was or what he was, like, I just
behind
knew him as Benny Drama's video. But then when Brat Summer started happening, all of a sudden I see Terry popping up in things with Charlie XCX. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, wait a second, what's going on here? And at some point or another, I think post-pandemic maybe, or maybe it was before, I'm not really sure, like Terry and Charlie, this was again before Charlie became like the big massive success that she was or is, became friends, and Terry sort of started becoming Charlie's like artistic director, kind of like, I think that's what he is now. I'm not sure what initially that started as, because again, like Charlie was a lot less successful when that happened, and Terry you know was like also dating Benny. So I don't know exactly how the relationship came to be.
I can tell you.
Yes, please. Let us in.
They met at a party and he kind of in a gauche way was like, oh, I have ideas for your, like he immediately pitched her instead of just like, you know, they got along. Then he was like, oh, I have ideas for your TikTok. Like we should talk about this. Like I have creative direction. And he's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have like pitched so fast, but it worked out and they just had the same energy. And so then, yeah, he's been sort of behind the scenes on helping her build up her popularity on TikTok and then also creative directing some of these brat rollout stuff too. So they were friends, but pretty immediately like working together. But I think in some of those, in that kind of like millennial Gen Z way where it's not really a strictly corporate relationship, like it's very much built on vibes and they're just good friends. And so then she became part of that circle with Benny too.
Yes. And I know that like Terry shot the, like took the picture that's the cover of the Crash album.
Yeah.
Obviously Bright doesn't have a photo on the cover, but then also Terry now works with other artists. Like he's working with Haim on all of their photos that they've been using for their cover art, which are all like, sort of recreation of like famous paparazzi pictures. So yeah, so that's how this all sort of like comes together. And so I follow Terry and Benny and Charlie, all of them on social media. So I feel like I knew about this show for a long time.
Yeah.
Because like three of the big, you know, forces behind this all were, you know, posting about it, talking about it, whatever, in the lead up to it. Because Charlie XCX is an executive producer on this show, Overcompensating. And I saw a interview that Benny Drama did that was like, yeah, people keep thinking that like we, you know, sort of like got Charlie to do this last minute or whatever. But they're like, no, she was attached to this show long before like Brat ever even became a thing. So like this has been something that she has been working on for as long as I think they've been working on to a certain degree. So yeah, so I knew that this was coming. And when they dropped the first trailer, I feel like we've had other shows where like sort of YouTube comedians or that genre of people try to parlay that into an actual TV show. And I feel like a lot of times it's not great. And so I was very trepidatious with this because I thought, okay, I do like all of the people involved here, but you know, sometimes like some executive can be like, yeah, they're really cool, let's give them a TV show. And then it's, you know, six episodes and kind of sucks. And then you never hear about it again. And I think also with shows that are kind of like either gay, like skew towards college age or young people, those can be really niche too. So I don't know. I was a little bit worried, but they asked me if I wanted to interview the cast for the junket they were doing. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. Like I would love to chat with them. Kind of the thing with these junkets is that they will email you months in advance and be like, hey, we're doing a junket at the beginning of June. Would you be interested in talking to these people? And you're like, sure. And then you never hear back from them. And then 3 days before it happens, they're like, hey, so here's the interview time. You're going to interview these people for this amount of time, whatever. And so I found out, like, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 days before I was interviewing them all that was happening. And so I binge watched the entire series, like, over the course of maybe a day and a half to prep for these interviews, because I was interviewing the whole cast in like three big group interviews. And I worry about a TV show about asking someone a question and then them going like, well, if you'd watch the finale, it's actually in there. So I was like, okay, I need to watch the full set of episodes before I do this interview, because I don't want to look stupid and piss them off by asking a question about something that doesn't end up, you know, that gets solved
or acknowledged.
So I watched it, I binge watched it all at once again, sort of being like, oh, this might be bad, and really just absolutely loved it and thought it was so funny and one of the funniest things that I've seen in a while. And comedy is so subjective, but this like really hit my type of humor. And I think the fact that it's like set on in a college, like around the time that I went to college, nostalgic for it in a certain way. So yeah, so I
and
loved
you were
it.
Famously in a frat yourself,
and so I was famously in a frat and famously closeted. So I really did relate to this a lot and had a lot of thoughts on it, and really loved watching it, loved interviewing the cast. You can read that and watch those on Parade.com. And yeah, it was a good time. But and then I was just sort of sitting around waiting for this to become a thing. And also sometimes like you watch something and then it just, and you're excited about it. And then it comes out and it's just a complete flop and nobody watches it. But at least the gay corners of Twitter have been obsessed with this show and
a lot about it.
Yeah. Too. Tweeting so many memes and moments. And I don't think it's been picked up for a season two yet,
technically,
but it feels like it's destined for that. It ends on a cliffhanger. It's so much fun. And I also don't think it looks like it's that expensive to shoot.
I sort of heard about this. You never mentioned it to me that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But
that sounded pointed for Pride Month.
But I did start seeing it. I think it just like hit this because it released on Amazon, what, mid-May? Late May?
Yeah, May 15th and all at once.
Yeah, all at once. But then I kind of just started hearing people be like, oh, this is funny. And I was sort of hesitant because of the age thing. Like, I'm like, these people look like they're 40. Why are we doing this college show? When is this even set? It doesn't make sense, which I think is sort of where criticism for it ends up. But by the time I watched like episode two, I was like, no, this is actually very funny that they're this old. And it's funny that there's sort of this nebulous era. Like, it's like, it does have the vibe of early 2000s college, but then the references tend to skew like Charlie XCX comes in and plays a song that she released in 2017, you know? So it's like, it's not very clear what time this is, but that just adds to the sort of camp of it. And it was like very reminiscent of like those CW shows where it was just over the top and campy and kind of like melodramatic. It gave me flashbacks to watching Greek, which was a show that was all about like the Greek culture on a campus, down to the point of like having a mean sister who didn't want to acknowledge her little brother coming to the same school and things like that. But obviously this has its own very specific POV. And also we've had like Secret Lives of College Lives, like College Girls and shows like that that have, you know, tried to explore the silliness of college. But this just does it in such an over-the-top way that it just became kind of that itself was the joke, where it was like, yeah, we've seen these college cliches play out so many times in movies and TV that, like, why not lean further into it? Like, we're not just going to have a frat. We're going to have the most outrageous, like, crass, silly, over-the-top, campy frat sucking from, like, a dick cup. Like everything about it was just so over the top that I kind of felt like, okay, that these 30-year-old actors were playing 18-year-olds.
I saw them talking about this on their podcast, Mary Beth Barone and Benny, and they were saying, you know, like, they were like, we don't think younger actors could play this because it is leaning into this certain level of like millennial cringe that was happening when we were all in college, and Gen Z people just wouldn't understand that. And also it's just like, yeah, suspend disbelief. Like, you can suspend disbelief on so many other things. Like, why are you so focused on the fact that it's a 33-year-old playing an 18-year-old? Yeah. And I think that if you sort of go into it with that as a mindset, it doesn't really bother you. It's like with Pen 15, these are adults playing middle school students, and then the other middle school students are just actual middle schoolers. And it's very weird, but once you kind of take it, it makes sense. And I also think that it works that everybody in this universe is older.
Yeah.
It's not like Dear Evan Hansen, where there's one person who's obviously way older than everybody else and pretending to be the same age. It's like, oh yeah, all of these people are like in their 30s and they're all pretending to be 19-year-olds. And
they're not like trying to look younger. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like they are not giving these actors acne or like worrying about them slouching or having like, you know, baby fat still. Like, they're very much, I think what was so uncanny valley about like Dear Evan Hansen was that he was like trying to look 18, and so it became obvious that he wasn't in fact 18 with like bad makeup and bad hair and bad posture. Whereas here it's like, yeah, this is like giving us The Breakfast Club. Like, it's like they're old actors and that doesn't matter because they're acting out like they're all acting on the same plane. Like, it's like, yeah, we're just going to pretend that they're teenagers and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So that honestly didn't really bother me that much. Yeah. I thought the humor was so funny and that all of the characters are so memorable for the most part, and they all have such a specific point of view, and the writing is so strong that everything just really works. And you can tell that a lot of the people in this group are very like improv based people, and that they like had a script and then filmed a bunch of scenes like as many times as they wanted doing different things and then used the best version of that, because there's so many great jokes in here.
And a lot of cameos and like,
yeah, so many cameos.
And I do think that there is something to be said about millennial cringe. And I think reading the criticism of this show, it highlights that sort of difference in I don't know, culture or like acceptance, where I think nowadays there's like this really impossible idea in consuming art that you all have to agree on something or it's bad. And so the like criticism that comes up where it's like, this isn't my college experience at all. And like, this isn't realistic that all these kids are partying instead of, whereas college is actually just a stressful, you know, going to class and worrying about getting a job. And it's like, well, yeah, of course this isn't reality, but that doesn't mean that there's not something to be enjoyed here. And it's not even to like label it as pure escapism, because I think there are real human, you know, emotions being explored in this show under its comedic wrappings, and still it's not realistic. Like, you know, I just don't think we allow ourselves space to accept that, one, people can have different opinions and reactions to art, and two, that liking a show that isn't specific to your needs doesn't mean that that show is bad. Like, I just, there's this weird obsessiveness about policing art, and that's not to say like, oh, no one can take a joke anymore, but just in a very specific way to how we absorb media now. It just seems like if not everyone's on the same page about this being high art, then that means it's not high art, and that any praise of it proves that you are a bad person. And that just seems kind of lazy. And I think that this show kind of inverts that, because it is so cringy and it is very specific and it is intentionally in some ways like quote unquote bad, or like, you know, just over the top or whatever you want to label it. And to not allow that to exist and instead to write it off as bad kind of defeats the purpose, like, while also highlighting the intention, I think, in making this such a cringy, millennial, zeitgeisty kind of show. Because I saw like articles that are like, who is this for? And how will they find an audience? And it's like, well, I think they did. Like, I think they found their audience. Like, you know, not everything is going to be Game of Thrones mass appeal, gather around the TV every Sunday and talk about it ad nauseum. But you can still find these niche audiences that find and recognize value in art without it meaning it's an abject failure.
I also think that premise of like, oh, this needs to be for everybody or no one will watch it is flawed, because I kind of think that if something is niche and but it's well done, that people will come find it even though it's niche. Like,
yeah, like Game Brat.
Right, like Brat, exactly. No. Or this show, or even like something like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, in like Game of Thrones now, looking back, looks like, oh yeah, it was this massive success that was just like waiting to happen. It was based on a very niche, like high fantasy book series that had been around since the 90s that most people did not know about, had not heard about, and involved people knowing an insane amount about this world and these families and how Westeros interacted. And it was so specific, but because it was well done, all of these people who had never watched a fantasy show were all of a sudden now reading these 1,000-page books.
Yeah,
And I think, you know, if you think about last year, like Shogun, I think is another good example of that, of something, that's so specific, but then turns out that everybody is really interested in it You know, not everything can be sort of like Ted Lasso, where it's like, oh yeah, this seems like on paper, like, yes, everyone would love it. And sort of everybody does. Like, I think that especially with comedy, sometimes going for something that's more specific ends up working better than going for something that's super broad. Mm-hmm. I think that the magic of overcompensating is in that it is, one, very ridiculous and over the top and campy and outlandish and just like unlike any bit of the real world.
Yeah.
And yet, two, taps into these like very, very real emotions that these characters have. So you really feel for them and relate to them in a way, even though some of the stuff that they're doing is crazy or some of the choices that they're making are bizarre. Like, I think that their relationships really are accurate to real life. Yeah. And I think that weaving those two things together is a really hard job. And that's part of why this show is so popular, because you're getting these sort of almost like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, What We Do in the Shadows kind of levels of over the top campness. But then you're getting this storylines that are seem like they're out of like Love, Simon or something, you know, that's like so heartfelt that you that it's like too much almost. So I think that that pairing of genres works really well here and looks a lot easier than it probably is to actually maintain.
Because I was like, you know, it's funny how like short our memories are, because I was like, okay, I mean, it's like 2017, why is this guy so scared of coming out? But then you like think about it and you're like, well, no, I mean, I think people still are scared of coming out, and why wouldn't they be? And like culturally, it all matters. And like, we just get this idea that because something's become mainstream, it's like officially over and no one ever stresses about it anymore. Like, it's like accepted that you can be gay at college, so why wouldn't he just come out? And like, yes, it can be frustrating to watch him not just own it. But I think if you remember that time, and I think you can definitely speak to this obviously too, I think it does feel authentic to this like character and where he was at and why he's scared about coming out. Like, you know, and it doesn't have to be like blatant homophobia. It's just like the inner workings are kind of like how we've been raised to think and feel about ourselves and what we're afraid of losing or what we're afraid of changing. And so I think that did become a really compelling element of this show, where at first it felt like a hindrance. Like, it's like, how long can this go on? Like, just come out already. But then you do feel for him at where he's at. And like, as you meet his family and as you learn that dynamic and as you learn his like history, you're kind of like, you're back there with him. And like, it is a sad and scary and frustrating place to be. And that leads to his sad and scary and frustrating decisions he makes.
Yeah, Shelby, you know, it's hard for her to remember a homophobic place because she grew up in the extremely privileged liberal enclave of Salt Lake City. I mean, I think it is really crazy to think about the fact that like gay marriage was only legalized in America like 10 years ago. You know, I feel like every I don't know, like International Women's Day or whatever, they release the, you know, there's like these Instagram graphics that are going around that are like, a woman had to ask her, you know, father for permission to divorce up until 1983. And you're like, what? Like, these are insane. And I think it is like, it's not that long ago that the world was very, very different. You know, like Survivor premiered in the year 2000 and that whole slew of reality TV shows that came out around then, like a big premise of them was like, we're going to put a gay person in a room with a not gay person. And it's going to be crazy that they can actually talk to each other. And it's, and now that doesn't seem like a big deal, but at the time it was like so jarring and shocking and jarring that like people that you could create a whole TV show just around the premise of like, oh, you have to have a conversation with a gay person. So I think that that's really real. And I also think, you know, like you live in LA, you lived in New York, I live in New York now. I think it's really easy when you've been in those kind of spaces where it's like, when I, since I've lived here, I really like have never had to deal with homophobia in a sort of like straight on manner, yeah. which is wild. It's like, I never think about like, oh, should I not hold hands with somebody? Oh, right. should I not go on a date to this kind of restaurant? Can I not, you know, like kiss somebody on the street? Like, it just never crosses my mind. Like, oh, I'm too gay. Oh, I'm wearing glitter. Oh, I'm doing whatever. Like, I yeah. just go about my day completely fine. It never like touches me. But I was home in Michigan this past weekend hanging out with one of my best friends from growing up who's a lesbian. And, you know, she was talking about like, oh yeah, like if we want to go on a date night, we go to these couple mm-hmm. restaurants. We don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. Oh, we found out this bar is like owned by a queer person. So we go there more often because we don't like going to bars where it's not. And I was just like, I haven't had to yeah. like face that sort of mental arithmetic at all. And it is really crazy. And I had another friend who like, who was somebody who I went to college with, who DM'd me on Instagram recently and was like, hey, like, just wanted to let you know that I'm like bi now, which is so exciting. But she was saying that, you know, some of her, like that she's not, you know, out to everybody right now. Mm-hmm. And that's like a sort of difficult process. And yeah. again, I think it's just when you're in these spaces, like, you know, probably lots of people on gay Twitter are, you yeah. don't necessarily think about how there are lots of people that that's still really tricky for. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I'll say about coming out, I mean, I could talk forever about coming out and yeah. my college experience, but I do think, so I went to a crazy conservative Republican college. So yeah. the thought of coming out really never crossed my mind yeah. while I was there. I wasn't meeting other people who were out or, you know, had that sort of energy. I think that this show is interesting for me because the college portion like is similar to the time I went to college and mm-hmm. some of the things that I did in college, but the coming out narrative is much more similar to like when I moved to New York City yeah. because I think that for Benny, the character in the TV show, it's like he's grown up in rural Idaho. yeah. He only knows like one way of doing things. Yeah. And even though he maybe knows he's gay, it's like there hasn't been any infrastructure or any change in his life mm-hmm. up until going to college that he could sort of like work with that. And so then you move to a new place where there's new people and new ideas infused into the system. And you're sort of just like so thrown off by yeah. how different that is. And it does take you a long time to sort of like get your bearing and acclimate and figure out what's going on and then actually be able to come out to people. And I feel like when I moved to New York and I started meeting people who were like, who either were gay or like very pro-gay in a loud, outspoken way, I was like, wait, this is different. This is weird. I don't like this. And then it sort of like took a while to soften mm-hmm. and be like, wait a second. Like, I actually think that these people are very like loving, caring people who are trying to project to the world that this is okay. And maybe mm-hmm. I should listen to that. And maybe I should sort of like accept what they're trying to put out into the world and give me. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is what is going on here where, yeah, like he got to college and in his first semester, he did not necessarily come out in a full yeah. real way. But yeah. it's like, yeah. that he's had what like 3 months to sort of unpack all of that. Like sexuality yeah. takes a long time yeah. to figure out and come to terms with. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting about this season is that there's a moment where they're at this Halloween party and Benny's character, like the guy he likes, is like mm-hmm. hooking up with a woman, and Benny's really upset about that. And then he sees his friend, Carmen, like across the bar, and they sort of hug. And then that's the end of the episode. And then you cut to the beginning of the next episode, and it's, and they're sort of like talking about kind of being into the same, like being into guys, and there's not like a coming out scene. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of confused when I watched the screener because I feel like we're so accustomed to like this big, yes, to this big coming out moment. And I was like, I had to rewind and was like, wait, did I miss something? Was this like a post-credit scene? Am I missing an episode? Did they mm-hmm. chop this out for some reason? So, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to watch all of the episodes before I, like, oh, before shit. I talked to them. Because I asked them, I was like, it feels like there should be a big coming out scene here. there's not, like, what was sort of the thought of, like, skipping over that or not showing it or whatever? And Benny was like, well, I don't think that there was a scene that they skipped over. Like, I think that she kind of saw and recognized what happened. Yeah. And now they're kind of talking about it, but in a way where he is still not, like, accepting or acknowledging that. Like, he has not said, I am gay, to anybody. He hasn't really even come out to himself yet. He's just sort of, like, kind of doing things and people kind of know, but not really. And I felt like that was also very similar to my experience, where it was like, there were definitely, like, parts of my brain knew and parts of me acted as if I was out, but then also I wasn't. And I definitely wouldn't have, like, admitted to it, and don't even know if I accepted that myself until a lot later. So I thought that that was really interesting and really, like, thoughtfully done. But anyways, yes. So
no, I agree. And I think that was something that stood out to me too, is, like, even with something like Love, Simon, or the show that spun off from that, Love, Victor, it's like, obviously there's a place for that. And it's, like, really beautiful to have those moments and those monologues between parents or friends or whatever, where you can really get the language around validating this experience, and for both sides to be able to vocalize, like, what this means and what this feels and how this sets their life up going forward. But I did like that this show was so happy to be messy. Like, these characters aren't necessarily great characters, and they own up to that sometimes. Like, the whole final act is them being like, wow, am I a bad friend? And it's like, it's fun to watch these people be messy, not just because they get into these hijinks and there's quirky moments and these big mess ups and all of that slapstick stuff, but more that it feels more realistic, especially for that age group. And, like, similar to what I was saying about, like, we, like, forget how recent, like, this wasn't okay. And of course that leads to trauma, and, like, decisions around, like, your queerness or identity becomes really hard to shuffle through. But also, these are supposedly, like, teenagers who don't really know what they're doing, who are kind of like, I don't know, they're just trying to sort it out. And so I liked that there was this, like, messiness to him that was part denial, but part, like, I'm not sure, like, maybe I would like a girl if I met the right girl. And, like, maybe if I did eat this chick out, I'll suddenly be straight or whatever. And I liked that, there wasn't this, like, dialogue of I am gay, but more like, what's happening? And, like, you know, there's a very specific phase of life where your brain is incapable of, like, fully knowing itself and fully understanding the kind of cause and effect of choices. And so the fact that this show was happy to sit in that mess instead of trying to clean it up into a very moving, palatable, easy PSA style coming out story kind of lent itself to the overarching theme of this, like, very campy, very messy, very over the top experience. And that just, like, it felt like their surroundings kind of matched the energy of their brains. Like, I feel like we're so used to shows telling us exactly who these people are and what their issues are and how they're going to come to grips with it. Whereas this show, we really only get bits and pieces of people's backstories. Like, Carmen is a good example, where she's dealing with the grief of, like, losing her brother, but we don't yet know what happened to her brother. We don't yet know, like, what, like, that flashback to the car wreck was. It, like, you know, like, there's these elements to her that is still a mystery, and it seems intentional in that we're not just withholding this for plot season two, but more that she still doesn't know how to face it or, like, work through it. And so she's making messy choices in her life that you could maybe, you know, sit back and be like, oh, well, I think this comes down to a reaction to the grief she faced and hasn't fully processed. But instead it's like, I think it just feels more authentic. And as a viewer, we don't have to think everything's, like, neatly tied up and explainable and this will all work out in this way because these are good people at heart and it'll all, like, play out as we see fit. It's much more reactionary and kind of impulsive. And I think that speaks to the era that they're technically in, even if the actors are, you know, 33 and able to look back and play with those energies a little more easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, 1,000%.
And even, like, the comedy people, like the roommate, Haley, or
You mean
Yeah. Like, she's Haley funny and she's there for the jokes. Like, she's the funny one. But I also think she has an interesting character. Like, it's like she is a girl's girl. And I like that she kind of surprised, like, she plays against type in some ways where you think, like, oh, I know this party heavy, like, boy obsessed. Like, she's just going to be the, like, drunk girl in the back corner the whole series. But then, like, when she finds out Benny lied about fucking Carmen, like, I really loved her just, like, standing in the hallway filming him and being like, you're probably just a sad virgin. Like, I thought she was a really interesting character, even if she was also there mainly for laughs.
Oh, yeah. No, she's such a great character because you kind of think, like, oh, at first, like, oh, she's just going to be the terrible roommate. Yeah. And then, like, oh, maybe she's going to be, like, the sort of vapid social climber, like, popular girl, even though there are, like, other versions of that in the show.
Yeah.
But she turns out to be, like, one of the more likable characters.
Yeah, like, and honestly, where she, only good friend.
Yeah. Yes, like, she's such a good friend to everybody. She is, like, sure, she's a little self-obsessed at certain points, but she's, like, really cheering for her friends.
Yeah.
She's pissed off at Benny for what he did to Carmen. But then also, when Carmen screws her over with, like, the Charlie XCX thing, she's, like, really actually hurt by that. And I think that arc is really interesting because it's not something that I would have expected, even though she's like being goofy the entire time. And like, oh my gosh, I have like so many lines of hers in the show are iconic, and I feel like TikTok has just been
the timing sucks. I'm so sorry.
You has been using the sounds like she's like pisses me off like about the dead brother. It's so good.
Sorry, Jessica, what story are you trying to tell?
I'd say 2 out of 10, maybe 3 out of 10 max. It was just like wet butt. So great.
And it's like, you don't expect, like, we think we're trained, like, shallow people aren't nice people or like whatever. Like, we have these tropes in our head and we believe these patterns in storytelling where they'll get their comeuppance or it'll turn out they're bad or whatever. And I like that they kind of turned it on their head where it's like, no, like, she can be shallow. She can like partying. She can like sex and girly stuff and also be a good friend. And I thought that was nice. And similar, like, the sister can be a bitch and she can be, you know, superficial and she can be cruel to her brother, but she can also be nice, you know? Like, it's like,
she is a Twilight head.
Yeah, like, she's a Twihard.
I also thought that the sister's narrative is so interesting because I do think there are a lot of people who were not popular at one point in their life and then sort of opt into popularity through they get hot or whatever, and sometimes that works for the best, sometimes that works for a negative. But I think that her story is really fun because she does become this horrible person and then at a certain point sort of realizes, wait a second, like, why am I doing this just to be cool? Like, I liked being the weird Twilight girl who loved Panic at the Disco more than I like being this popular girl. And I thought everybody's storylines were much more interesting and nuanced than I thought they were going to be. Even her boyfriend,
Peter.
Adam DeMarco character, has like more going on than you would necessarily think. And I'm excited for season 2. Hopefully they'll get more episodes and we'll get a little bit more time to sort of like dig through some of the other characters, because I do think like the love interest, we didn't necessarily get a ton of. He's British for some reason. Like, I'm interested on more of what's going on with him. But I think another thing that I really liked about the show is that we are so accustomed with these gay shows. Like, you know, we get a couple of them every year that are these big things, and there's certain beats that we get all the time where it's like, okay, we're always going to get a coming out narrative, we're always going to get a sort of romance situation. And I think that this show sets itself up to make you think that, oh, it's going to be about this romance between Benny and Miles. And, you know, it's like, first they sort of like see each other across the quad, and then they have some like awkward interactions, and then they're becoming better friends, and you just think you sort of know where it's going. But the show ends up being about mostly Benny's relationship with Carmen and their friendship and how that's like the real love story. And I think for so many gay people, myself included, it's like, yeah, the best relationships I have in my life are with female friends. Like, they're not romantic relationships. Like, romantic relationships are fine and good. And, you know, like at some point I would like to be in something that's like more long-term, but it's like, I love my friends who are women so much and like would not want to sacrifice that for anything. And I think that having a show that really highlights that and highlights how important that is for people and how important that is for people who are coming out, you know, like I think that there were lots of women in my life who obviously knew that I was gay, like long before I was going to be coming out, and were all like very kind and patient and sort of like, okay, like we know that you're not actually interested in Emma Roberts, but we will let you talk about it and we'll nod along and be like, sure. Yep. And just like be your good friend until you figure it out. And then they'll be like, yes. And we've known all along and great to like have the real you at the party now. but I think that that is such a, like a wonderful type of relationship that we don't necessarily get to see on TV or in movies very often. The version of this that we get is like the gay best friend, where the woman is the main character and then the guy is just sort of like the comedic aside. But I like that this show
the f-hag. I'm not gonna say it.
I don't know if anybody in this is a fag gag though.
I liked like that speaks to the overcompensating of all these characters and not just the guy trying to pretend to be straight. Like, she comes onto this information and in an effort to prove her friendship and like show her love, she overcompensates and overextends the okay, we're gonna test this game theory, we're gonna get you out. And I like that. Like, it was messy, it was kind of uncomfortable, she stumbled, she did maybe some wrong stuff, like like watching the gay porn and stuff. Like, it was like, okay, you're doing too much, but it's also like, well, that's charming in its own way. And I think that was fun in this show too, is just how much everyone overcompensates in different avenues in their life. And even the show itself, the culture itself, like this highly sexualized, highly alcohol infused, like drug induced version of college is over the top and it is loud. And it's like, you know, it's hiding the more emotional undertones of the series. And I think that all lends itself to this sort of overcompensating, campy millennial cringe. Like, we all do this, we all try too hard, but it's okay to be a try hard. Like, you know, like that's just part of figuring yourself out. And I like that this show leans into it in all avenues, including sexual references and frat culture and innuendo and explicit sex. Like, it's not necessarily something I'm always like, oh yeah, I love raunchy humor. Like, that's not always my cup of tea, but I think it works well here exactly because it plays into the same elements of overdoing it that you get in the more subtle plot bits as well.
I feel like this is pretty accurate to college in a lot of those regards. Like, I know that our college experiences were like slightly different, but I feel like the sort of like, when I think of the raunchier end of my college spectrum, not necessarily of things that I was doing, but things that I knew my friends were doing on a very conservative Christian campus, and then compare that to things, you know, stories and stuff I've heard from people who went to like state schools. I'm like, I think all of this is like pretty.
Well, but you have like, you have to fuck on your first day or you'll be in the improv group, like, you know, like just the sad
like yes, but I also think that like 18 year olds are deranged and like some of that kind of stuff is real. Like, after college I learned about all of these people who were like, oh yeah, like they were given blowjobs in the baseball dugouts at night and hiding from campus security like in the river, and it's like, what? Like, what were you? I did not realize that any of this kind of stuff was happening, and yet here it was.
That's true.
And I think about like oh, some of the like drinking stuff that I did in college. And again, I wasn't like that bad of a person. And I'm like, oh yeah, like some of these things I think are very accurate, especially because like nobody really knows what their like body and sort of like social life and whatever can handle yet. And so, and also everyone's trying to like be a big deal and impress other people. So there's lots of like, oh yeah, like I had sex with six girls on the first day. And it's like, did you? Like, I don't know. But nobody else really knows if that's even like possible or whatnot. You think like, oh, maybe I came to college and I just like was sort of sheltered in high school. And yeah, everybody is just having sex constantly. And I feel like it's only until you're older that you can sort of piece through those stories where if someone's like, I drank like six bottles of vodka in one evening, you're like, no, that didn't happen. Like you would be dead if that was the case. But if someone had told me that when I was, you know, 19, I would have been like, wow, like crazy what the body can do. I think the thing that was very accurate that I thought was very funny about this show is at one point he goes over for like a hookup and he gets there and it's Bowen Yang and Matt Rogers playing these like boyfriends / husbands, I can't remember, in an open relationship, and they just proceed to list up all of these like very bizarre rules that they have. Yeah. And I'm like, that is a gay open relationship. I have never been in one, thank God, but it's like every time you talk to somebody who is either in one or like interacted with people who were in them, it's like, oh, this is a disaster. And these people are like hot messes and they're trying to cobble it together with these like bizarre sets of rules that make sense to nobody and end up just like really like wreaking havoc on all people who come within, you know, a mile shouting distance of this open relationship. And I just thought that was so funny how in that like one scene they really got it, all of that.
There were a lot of fun like bits, like,
and then the Charlie XCX concert was great, and everything
flat for college.
Are you joking? I think Charlie would really F with my vibe.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's great. I know in the second season they talked about, or like he's talked about, hey, he wants to do a spring break part in season two. But I'm like, I don't know how we get Charlie XCX back for, like, in the plot again, but I'm like, somehow or another, she has to come back, because I felt like she was so funny, and was really...
What's Your Face is going to work for her label company, right?
I guess that's true. She, like, just had such great comedic timing, and it was interesting that this show came out at the same time as The Weeknd's movie did, and everyone was sort of, like, grabbing screen grabs of that, and how bad at acting he was, and how, like, sort of effortless she is. Granted, she's playing herself in this, but I do think she's so funny, and it's great because she's, like, poking fun at herself too. Like she's playing a version of herself that's wild. But yeah, she's like, I don't do college coke. Great. An iconic line.
I had a lot of fun with this. I think it reminded me of those over the top shows I liked as a kid, like about college, but then it also reminded me of college. I mean, obviously in a very different way, because I was never, ever, ever in a party scene in my whole life. So,
or gay.
That's realistic. Yeah. But I did just think there was a lot of fun being had. And I liked the background characters and the like world building of this crazy sex obsessed college, and just everyone like doing coke in the library. Like, there were just so many delightful little pieces that it just, it made my little millennial cringe heart sing. Like, and so reading the criticism, like, obviously no show's perfect, but to, like, get hung up on things that seem very intentional, it kind of, like, speaks to this inability to just, like, lean into something. Like, to just let go and, like, let something be strange. Let something be a little bit unexpected, because... Yeah, obviously these characters aren't teenagers, but I think this show would be uncomfortable to watch if they were teenagers. Like, you know, like, sure, you can go and watch whatever that freaking HBO Zendaya show is. I don't want it. I like this version of sad teenagers trying to figure themselves out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really just did love this show. I thought it was a very unexpected, like, wonderful piece of TV. And I haven't really liked a show like brand new like this, I think, in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was fun. And I think, yeah, like obviously this isn't Insecure or something where you have a show that's trying to do something very intentional that elevates a genre, like blah, blah, blah. But I think this is doing something that goes beyond just like a funny guy from YouTube wants to make a funny show for a, you know, major audience. And I don't know, like, I just think we can let things be what they are, and it's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was a lovely 299th episode.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That means really, next week we are finally at our 300th episode, which is very exciting. I think that we're doing our mailbag. So if you have any questions, now is your last chance to get those in for us.
Wait, you are around next week?
Yes, I'm around next week.
Oh wow.
And then the following week I head on vacation. So
gorgeous.
This will probably be our last episode for a bit. We'll be on a hiatus until like after 4th of July. Okay. But we'll be fun to end on a high note for now. And yeah, if you have questions, let us know. Email them in, text them in, respond to an Instagram slide or whatever. Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening. Bye.